Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Wednesday, January 11th, 2023. And today we're going to bring you to Washington, D.C., to the House Democrats press conference, giving us an update after all the turmoil of the Republicans electing a Speaker of the House. And now the Democrats want to have their say as to their elected leadership and what we can expect in the coming Congress in terms of laws, policies, actions, and hopefully a united stand. Let's join them now in Washington, D.C.
Pleasure to be with three of our ranking members and our distinguished vice chair at this press conference. House Democrats are ready. In the 118th Congress, we stand united behind Hakeem Jeffries, whose leadership is astounding, bold, courageous, decisive. You get the point. The chaos and crisis on the other side of the aisle has not stopped House Republicans. After caving to demands from extremists in their conference, Speaker McCarthy has a secret three-page list of promises that will prevent his caucus from voting down their own rules package. Rather than trying to find common ground, House Republicans have chosen a path of division and default. We've not seen a single concrete proposal from Republican leadership that will lower costs for everyday Americans. Instead, they've ratcheted up their attacks on women's reproductive rights, against voting rights legislation, and against codifying Roe v. Wade. When they're ready to get serious about the most pressing issues facing this country, House Democrats stand ready to work with them to deliver. Until then, we're going to continue to call out their extremism each and every step of the way. Our Vice Chair, Ted Lieu.
Thank you, Chairman Aguilar, and good morning. Last week, the American people saw a clear contrast between a unified Democratic caucus working on behalf of the American people and the chaos, confusion, crisis of the Republican caucus who've been captured by MAGA extremists. And this contrast continues this week. So while Democrats are putting people over politics and working to lower costs and get better paying jobs and safer communities, what is the very first thing Republicans do, the very first bill they pass? It guts the Office of Government Ethics. Essentially, when you read what they say, you cannot hire any staff after 30 days for that important office, which means if any staff has to leave, relocate, resign, for whatever reason, leave the office, they cannot be replaced. So over time, this office could shrink to nothing. And why do Republicans want to do that? Well, they want to stop investigations into themselves. And we see that again with what's going to be voted on today, which is their committee to obstruct justice. They're going to create a committee to meddle into ongoing law enforcement investigations. Some of these investigations are investigating Republican members of Congress, as well as the former failed president. So that is what the American people are seeing, and that contrast will continue to play out week after week after week. And now it's my honor to introduce our terrific ranking member of Appropriations, Rosa DeLauro.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good morning. Pleasure to be with all of you today, and I want to say a thank you to Chairman Aguilar, Vice Chairman Lieu, for inviting me to join the press conference this morning, and also to thank my colleagues, Chairman Neal and Chairman Boyle, for their leadership. As my colleagues have mentioned, the Republicans' chaotic process to elect a Speaker of the House, it's unprecedented, and it's also dangerous. Republicans are making side agreements handshake deals that not only contradict their calls for transparency, but also attempt to short-circuit the 2024 government funding process before it even gets started. Appropriations bills are must-pass. They require bipartisan, bicameral agreement, like the House Democratic majority secured when we passed the agreement funding the omnibus bill in December. It appears, quite honestly, that Republicans, they don't understand this process, because in his attempt to become Speaker, Kevin McCarthy reportedly already promised to cap spending at the 2022 levels in exchange for votes. Let me just take a second to tell you about what that means. Now, obviously, we do not have the exact cut that the Speaker traded for votes because the deal was made in secret. But there's a discussion that the cut from 2023 would apply to all discretionary spending, defense and non-defense. That's at least $130 billion cut to all discretionary spending. That's about an 8% cut. If you take it all from non-defense, it is about a 17% cut. And while there are some House Republicans saying that they will not cut national security, they would then leave veterans in the lurch. Taking the veterans program back to 2022 would shortchange VA medical care by at least $31 billion. That's a 32% below what we just enacted in December. It doesn't account for potential increases the department will identify on their upcoming budget request. So they're going to slash what are critical investments. And as I said, it's defense, national security, military readiness, and our combat capability.
Seniors born before 1963 in need of dental work, this will shock you.
The government did one thing right this year. They allowed seniors to get free dental care for years.
Seniors 59 and older can get free dental work, crowns, implants, x-rays.
This saved me over $3,000.
And our combat capability. And again, I make reference to service members and their families. The funds that they rely on, this is cuts to VA medical care, mental health services, the homeless assistance programs that ensure that we reach unhoused veterans. They will be making serious cuts to law enforcement. These spending cuts harm families, communities throughout the U.S. that are already struggling with inflation and the cost of living. It is not just a soundbite to say that people are living in this country today paycheck to paycheck. It is a reality. So the funding for high poverty schools, post-secondary education, early learning programs hang in the balance. Access to childcare, training programs are at risk. We will cut the benefits for small businesses. But I guess my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, they consider that all of these services are unimportant, not to be taken into consideration, because you know as well as I know that budgets are statements of values. And it tells you precisely where their values are or are not. In our bills, we provided 43.5 million people the SNAP benefits they need. This past year alone, our bills created over 21,500 affordable housing units. Progress made to help those in most need put food on their table, roof over their heads. All of that is jeopardized. Republicans have created an institution that governs in the shadows, at the expense of hardworking families, and a speaker who traded funding that helps communities, that protects our national security, for personal gain. I hope this troubling, this dangerous trend is reversed soon, and that transparency is restored to the government funding process. And with that, let me introduce you the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, Congressman Richard Neal.
Thanks, Rosa. Thanks to the leadership team here for
having us get out front on some of the issues that we're going to confront in the course of the next few months. So even for those of you who had a chance to witness the debate last night and their first funding bill, $114 billion it adds to the national deficit. And if you listen to the debate last night, I also thought what was compelling to the battle, they came unarmed. It was pretty remarkable to listen to the back and forth last night where we dealt with facts and specificity, and they dealt once again in generalities and kind of empty talk. What I also think is noteworthy is we get to what eventually will be a vote on the debt ceiling, and certainly putting the question in front of the American people. They voted for the CARES Act. They voted for more money for national defense spending. Some of them voted for the infrastructure bill. And then they also voted for $5 trillion worth of tax cuts in 2001, 2003, and 2017. Although it comes down to about $4.7 trillion of tax cuts. And it allows them, in this instance, after what they've done, to sort of set the fire and then call the fire department. So it's been kind of the recklessness that they've embraced in this fiscal debate and discussion. But it's going to bring us to the precipice because it'll allow us to have a full throttle debate over the role of Social Security and Medicare in our lives. I'm looking forward to that. It's really important to remember, as I've just described it, where the tax cuts were, where the spending increases came from, and then how we intend to defend Social Security and Medicare and do the responsible thing and raise the debt ceiling. The debt ceiling shouldn't be held hostage to this sort of conversation, particularly when you participated in increased spending, which, by the way, was all valid. All valid. The CARES Act. Speaker Pelosi and I, with Secretary Mnuchin, we negotiated that legislation in her office. Many of you were witness to it when you saw the final product, and we came out of the Speaker's office at the time with Secretary Mnuchin calling in back and forth over 8 days. They all voted for it. And I call attention to that because now they want to say, well, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling until you agree to irresponsible cuts in domestic spending. Better to have the discussion right now. Let's set the table. Let's get to the debate over Social Security and Medicare. Happy to engage.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Richie. So I'm Brendan Boyle, Brendan, not Brandon, incoming ranking member of the Budget Committee. And actually, let me build off what Richie just said and focus on one area as part of the adopted rules package last night, and that's Cutco. You know, you can always tell when there's a Democrat in the White House because their Republican colleagues suddenly become concerned again about deficit and debt. When there's a Republican in the White House, they conveniently forget that topic. But every time they take over and there's a Democrat in the White House, suddenly there's this focus on deficit and debt. Well, here's the hypocrisy in what they're saying. As part of Cutco that they reinstated last night, any tax cuts that they propose do not have to be offset. So all of those critical investments that Chair DeLauro spoke about, critical investments in the American people, education, jobs creation, helping veterans, all of those have to be offset according to their rules. But another big round of tax cuts, like what they did the last time they're in the majority, $2 trillion tax cut, 83% of which went to the wealthiest 1%, not one dime of that would have to be offset. So keep that in mind when they are crying crocodile tears about our national debt. I would also say, as Chairman Neal did, the debt ceiling should not ever be something we play around with. It is too dangerous. This country has been able to get through and weather government shutdowns. We would not be able to weather a compromise on the full faith and credit of the United States. It would cripple not only the U.S. economy, but the world economy. This caucus has the responsible position not to play politics with this. The other side has been threatening repeatedly, as recently as last night, to refuse to raise the debt ceiling because they're so hell-bent on cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. We won't let them get away with it. And now it's my pleasure to bring back our chairman, Pete Aguilar.
Thanks, Brendan. Questions?
Chairman Aguilar, should the discovery of President Biden's classified documents been disclosed before the midterm?
Well, let's step back and talk about this for a minute, because, and I appreciate the question, this is Republican hypocrisy at its finest. When the former president had 320 documents found in his personal residence, they said that, quote, that will not be a priority. What President Biden did was disclose this to the archives, let law enforcement know. That is exactly the way that you should handle this. So we're going to support the fact that the president is following this established protocol, that he did the right thing, and see where we go from here. But we're not interested. Republicans aren't interested in having meaningful oversight. They're just interested in opposing this president. Go ahead.
What do you say to critics who argue these documents were discovered November 2nd, midterms were November 8th, and they could have been withheld to avoid potential damage against Democrats before the midterms?
This was done in consultation. You saw Merrick Garland have a U.S. attorney weigh in at this point. This is being done the exact way, getting the archives involved. Someone who was on the January 6th committee, there is a process to handling documents. The president is handling it the way he should. That's what's important here. Go ahead.
Follow up on that, though. In April, we knew about the search warrant executed at Mar-a-Lago. Isn't that sort of a time when everybody goes, let's just make sure we don't have any of our own?
That's a question for me. That might be a question directed down the street. But what I'll tell you is, this is being done. This is being handled the way he should. This is not about August. This is about today. Where we are at. The president is handling this the way that he should. He's disclosing it. He's letting the archives know. Law enforcement is aware. We're handling this with the seriousness at which it deserves. But we're not downplaying this, which is exactly what House Republicans have done.
And that is from the U.S. government, the Congress, the Democrats, newly elected, holding a press conference, giving their views on what we can expect from a Republican-dominated Senate and what the Congress hopes to do in the coming sessions. Now we'll turn to state government. Monday, January, this past January 9th, the state of Illinois held inauguration ceremonies for its elected officials, and those leaders gave insight as to their plans for this coming year. We heard an earlier broadcast live from Springfield, statements from the Attorney General Kwame Raoul, and we also heard statements from the Governor J.B. Pritzker. And now we'll share a few remarks from Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, whose election set a new precedent that was historic, and she's now, of course, coming into her second term. She is the first African-American female elected to the position of lieutenant governor, and she reminded voters that there is great history in this election and much that has been overcome. There are a number of elected officials who in this second term are applauding their colleagues for being steadfast during the global pandemic and acknowledging that these were, in fact, very challenging times for all, inasmuch as so much was unprecedented in terms of policies and procedures and practices that had to be put in place to handle the unexpected emergency. The pledge by Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton reminds voters the importance of family support as well as dedication to those who are hoping that the person they elect to office will continue to represent their interests. So here are remarks from Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton at the inauguration ceremonies this week.
Our four beautiful daughters, Tyler, Cassidy, Ryan, and McKenna. therapy. You help me to stay grounded in an unpredictable world, and I love you for that. To my father, Henry, a Navy veteran who turned 90 this March, he marched with us.
Enjoy.